Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Almost everywhere you look, there are signs that the American democracy we all grew up in is on the brink of disappearing. The previous president's aberrant and abhorrent behavior has given license to those with authoritarian tendencies to move what used to be an un-American ideology on the fringe into the mainstream. Among the most critical examples can be found in states controlled by Republican legislatures, where laws aimed at limiting voting rights and moves to replace elections officials who don't subscribe to the big lie with those who do and who are willing to work in opposition to the will of the people threatens to install minority rule. Efforts to that end have for years embroiled North Carolina in a series of lawsuits over congressional and legislative voting maps. With the drawing of maps based on the 2020 census, the state finds itself back in court, the first in a series of trials, ended last week with a decision expected as early as tomorrow, and we will look at that case later in the program. First, we examine a different concern revolving around the erosion of democracy in America, one that just a few short months ago would have seemed unthinkable. The setting of the stage for a possible coup following the presidential election of 2024 and the involvement of members of our military in that coup. That concern was floated just last month in an op-ed piece written by three retired generals. They wrote of a troubling scenario in which the military chain of command could be thrown into chaos in the aftermath of a close or contested election. One of those generals, retired Major General Paul Eaton, joins us now to help us explain, or to help explain why he and his co-authors believe the military must prepare now for a 2024 insurrection. Major General Eaton is senior advisor to Vote Vets. Welcome to the program. Nice to have you here.
Mike, thank you very much for having me.
Had your Washington Post op-ed not been written by you and two other generals, it might have been viewed by many as being overly alarmist. But I know that you've been able to expand on that piece in various television and radio interviews. But what has been the reaction of the Pentagon, of your colleagues in the military, still in positions of command and on active duty? Reactions from congressional members, reaction from the White House. What have you heard back from them about?
Well, first, why we wrote that, it was pretty much indications and warnings that that we received. On 6 January, I would never have believed that we would have to write it, that the federal police forces, that the armed forces would stand strong and not suffer any infection from the extreme right, from the insurgents that we saw on 6 January. But when you see that 10% of the men, and largely men, charged with the insurrection, 10% are veterans or a handful of active duty, troubling. Then you look at 124 generals and admirals retired, write a letter that support Trump's lie, his great lie on the election, that President Biden is a fraudulently elected president of the United States, and go on to challenge his suitability to perform in that role. And then finally, you've got a handful of Republican governors, Oklahoma first, followed by Florida and Texas, that challenged the notion that the president is the commander-in-chief of the National Guard and all armed forces of the United States. That's the final trigger that created this op-ed. Now the...
Uh-oh. I think we have just lost General Eaton here. I think his connection has frozen. I hope that we have a backup phone number for him, because I want to continue this right now. Major General Eaton wrote this op-ed piece called "The Military Must Prepare Now
to Ferret Out Extremists."
Ah, I'm sorry, General, we lost you just about 15 seconds ago, so I'm not sure what you said in your last couple of sentences.
Okay, so the only reason that that I would expect, and it's been largely a positive reaction to the op-ed, but the fact that Admiral Kirby got out in front in a relatively hurriedly put together press conference on what the Pentagon is doing to ferret out extremists is an indicator that they are reacting to at least the low probability but very high impact event that we would have an infection in the armed forces from extremist groups. From
have you heard from Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, of whom you are describe yourself as a huge fan, or from Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Mark Milley about your article?
We have not. I have not.
Okay. Does that surprise you that you haven't heard?
No. There's this thing that you know, when generals retire, go out and be quiet. And we have seen, obviously, in the last 20 years that that there is a change in that protocol. So there is a plausible deniability available to the current civilian leadership and military leadership, where they noted, and then they say in close contact with each other, let's take a look. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that you're correct that usually retired military people simply be quiet. They just disappear once they leave the military, and they don't comment on the command decisions by the commander-in-chief or by people remaining in the military. And the same is true of former presidents. They usually keep a low profile once they leave office, and leave because they have an understanding of what the current occupant of the Oval Office is going through, and that they don't have all the facts at their disposal, and then they should be quiet and let that person run the show. But you're saying that's changing, and it's changing on both sides. It's not just your article from your group of retired military veterans. It's other retired military veterans taking the opposing point of view. Is this part of the problem?
So, Mike, when former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Crowell, endorsed President Clinton before Bill Clinton's election, that was my first memory of retired senior military getting involved in the political arena. Not sure it's a good idea, but it happened. And it's evolved a little bit. And we've seen it on both sides. And it's a search for validators. In Washington, D.C., there's this cottage industry of using retired military or retired diplomats as validators for executive branch decisions or policies. So if we take that, then you get a reaction sometimes. For instance, in 2006, I wrote an op-ed critical of Mr. Rumsfeld. And when that thing hit the New York Times, a lot of people reacted, you know, that's what I thought, but I was afraid to say it. And so the retired military community is in a position to raise flags when they see a requirement that let's take a look at this. If you're within a small group of very senior retired, like retired four stars, that club is very small, very tight, and very active. But if you want to flag something for the greater population, and you have a real concern, and do so in a rational manner, I think it is appropriate that we indicate we have a concern, and it's worth a look. And I do believe that there has been extremist activity attempting to penetrate the armed forces of the United States, actively recruiting our men and women. That is a problem.
Among you and those who wrote this op-ed piece in the Washington Post, you have over 100 years of military experience among the three of you. You, Antonia Taguba, who's a retired Army Major General, and Stephen Anderson, a retired Brigadier General, over 30 years of service on both their parts and on yours as well. In that piece, you lay out why the insurrection of January 6th has made you increasingly concerned for the next election, and the sentence that seems to have been quoted by almost every outlet on the planet is this, quote, "We are chilled to our bones at the thought of a coup succeeding next time." Do you view what happened last January 6th as a dress rehearsal that might have worked, or as an indication that the forces behind that insurrection will, in fact, try again, or both?
All the above. We viewed 6th January as an incompetently executed attempt to change the outcome of an election of the President of the United States. The Republican Party did very well in the House and in the Senate. The President, of course, was sanctioned by the American people, better than 7 million votes going to Biden Moore. And so you've got a political outcome, but the lead up to that election is the greatest troubling component. When you get a fellow like Miller put into the Secretary of Defense position in an acting capacity, without the experience, certainly without the capacities to execute that very difficult role, and other people placed in positions to aid and abet the possible outcome of an attempted coup by the last president, that's grounds for real concern. Like any other organization, people learn. Learning organizations create an after-action review. What went well, what did not go well, how to mitigate that which did not go well. So the next attempt, and I do believe there will be a next attempt, is going to be better organized. It is going to be a little bit more thorough. It's probably going to be well-financed. And we need to war game how to mitigate against those concerns, those possible outcomes. And I'll just bring up, there about 6 months before the last election, there was a transition integrity project war game, four scenarios. And this was created by Rosa Brooks and some teammates that she had, where you analyze possible outcomes, role players playing the red team commander, a man named Max Boot, played Donald Trump, did it brilliantly, ruthlessly, and a lot of food for thought came out of that. What we did not war game was a bit of an infection in the armed forces of the United States, in our federal police forces, FBI, the marshals, and what would happen if there was enough of an infection that you had a problem. Now, is 10%, as we saw from the insurgents on 6th January, is that a problem? Well, that's a big number. And I believe that we need to do another war game and allow the Defense Department to understand possible outcomes. And the whole thing about red team commanders is they throw out the unlikely. They will make decisions that low likelihood, but very high impact events.
Let me stop you there. We have to take a break. We're coming right back with more on Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest in this segment of the program is Major General Paul Eaton, retired from the U.S. Army, the co-author, along with two other generals, of a Washington Post op-ed piece a couple of weeks ago called The Military Must Prepare Now for a 2024 Insurrection. And lest people think that this is being blown out of proportion, understand that although Joe Biden won this presidential election by 7 million popular votes, it is not the popular vote that determines the occupant of the Oval Office. It is the Electoral College, and that is going to be determined both in this past election and in the next one, in four very narrowly divided swing states, where in at least one, the difference, I think, was about 0.3% in the popular vote. And that could lead to, particularly if the vote is being manipulated by outside forces, that could lead to a quagmire when it comes time to count those votes. It has been the tradition of the military to stay out of politics and out of domestic issues. They do the bidding of our duly elected president, who is also the commander-in-chief. But we have seen that those with an authoritarian streak are all too willing to trash traditions that have made this country great. And you cited the example of the commanding general of the Oklahoma National Guard saying it is the governor of that state who acts as his commander-in-chief and not the president of the United States. How can anyone at such a high level have such a grave lack of understanding of how this works and of the chain of command and the Constitution? How can they be in that position and not understand that?
Mike, governors pick the men they want to be the commander of their National Guard, their respective National Guards. And it is not surprising that you would have somebody constitutionally awkward or compromised placed in a very conservative, Republican, Trump-dominated state to do his bidding. So when we recommend not only a war game to ferret out the possibilities, but also civics instruction. Some of the feedback that I have gotten is an alarming lack of understanding of our Constitution, how the electoral system operates.
This is clearly a problem nationwide. It is clearly a problem with those who stormed the Capitol on January 6th. They thought they were doing the bidding of, quote, their president, end quote, to disrupt the congressional authority to count the votes. And they thought they were acting as patriots. They, in fact, were not. And that shows an alarming lack of understanding of the process. And you say that extends to the armed forces, and you have advised the Pentagon to, quote, immediately order a civics review for all members, uniformed and civilian, on the Constitution and electoral integrity. What has been the response to that admonition? What needs to be taught?
The feedback so far is very positive and an agreement with what we laid out. I have not received to my face a challenge to the nature of that op-ed and to the points that we laid out. It seems simplistic, but I believe that we have had a reduction in quality instruction in our high schools and in our colleges for civics lessons. When I talk to my peers and they reflect on what they see being instructed right now to their children, they see a remarkable decline in the fundamentals of creation of a graduate of high school or of college who understands our Constitution and how our political system and how our government works. That we need to address after the fact in the military now is something that we recommend. This is a recommendation also to all our educators that we have a problem nationwide, as you discussed. It is not unique to the military that we have a failure to understand how our system operates.
And that lack of understanding plays right into the hands of bad actors in certain powers of position. You are very critical of the Republican Party, which you should be, I suppose, because they're no longer hiding an agenda that seeks power above all else, including the Constitution. But you have taken it a step further. You refer to people like Congressman Jim Jordan and Republican House Leader Kevin McCarthy as traitors. That is a powerful word. Is that what they are? And if so, if it can be proven, what should be their fate?
Mike, both those men took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. They are not fulfilling their oath. That, in my mind, when they not only fail to fulfill their oath, but actively work against it, as they both did in the votes to confirm, we need to take a hard look at who these people are. And they're certainly not alone. They're Congresswomen Cawthorn and Green, and Senator Hawley. I mean, there are so many to discuss here.
And it could go up the chain. It could go up the chain of command. The January 6th Commission might discover similar activity on the part of the former president. What if Donald Trump is found to have played a key role in all of this? Would that make him a traitor? And if so, what should happen to him?
Clear possibility. And we've got a very well-educated, a very well-prepared attorney general and a Department of Justice that is man-trained and equipped to do just what we're talking about.
If they choose to go down that path, and there are people who are worried that they will not, if we come to a contested election, and many experts believe that we will in 24 come to a highly contested, razor-thin election, and the processes behind the scenes are already being set up to manipulate the vote in favor of Republicans over Democrats, where does that put the military? How would they decide whether or not to act?
So what we were concerned about, I view military action as an extreme low probability, but very high impact if it happens. And what we expect to see is confusion in the ranks based on what you just laid out, where you have a contested election, where you do not have two great personalities, George W. Bush and Al Gore. Two men who had a contested election, came down to a handful of votes, and we had a very unusual approach through the Supreme Court to adjudicate. Now, if we have different personalities and we infuse enough doubt in the American people, that clearly can infect the rank and file and the whole chain of command of the armed forces and our federal police forces and our state and local police forces. So the specter, and there's a new book out, How Civil Wars Start, by Barbara Walter. I haven't read it yet, but I've read the reviews on it, and it's next on the list. But it is an alarming analysis of the current state of affairs in the United States and how we line up with other democracies, and it's not a pretty picture.
And what is happening now in this country, if you look at the it's very dangerous to compare what's happening now to Hitler or to Nazi Germany, but if you just take them out of the equation, it's very much like what happens in authoritarian regimes, how they take power and how democracy slips away quickly, quietly, and without a whimper in many cases. I could go on with this conversation for a long time, but at last I can't, so I'm going to have to end it here. But I hope that you'll come back and keep us posted on what you see developing as conditions go forward. Major General Paul Eaton, co-author of the Washington Post op-ed, which appeared last month in the paper, called "The Military Must Prepare Now for a 2024 Insurrection." General, thank you very much for the time.
Mike, thank you very much.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.